It is now 8:31 a.m. on August 14th, 2020. And I call the meeting on the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. This meeting is video hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on this agenda have been properly noticed of this fact and have been supplied with meeting access instructions. Please note that continuing education credit will not be granted listening to this meeting. Ms. Pakanon, would you please call the roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Ms. Shreve? Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Malott?
Present.
Dr. Bohansky?
Here.
Dr. Catarino?
Here.
Dr. Davis?
Present.
Mr. Dinar? Dr. Gill?
Here.
Ms. LaVoy? And Dr. Meyer?
Present.
7 members present, you have a quorum.
Excellent, thank you. Please note that the times stated on the agenda are approximate. The board makes every effort to begin proceedings at the scheduled time. The board may suspend the discussion of one agenda item, proceed to a timed item, and then return to a former agenda item at a later time. We would like to take a moment to welcome Dr. Linda Catarina to the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners. We are pleased to have you join us. Will you please introduce yourself to the board, the staff, and the public members?
Thank you. Yes, I'm Dr. Linda Catarino. I have been a psychologist since 1977. I moved to Arizona to attend ASU in 1973 and lived here ever since. My degree is in educational psychology with a specialization in school psychology. So I've been in private practice since 77. In addition, I've worked in the school district and I taught at the American School of Professional Psychology for 4 years and then at Arizona State University from 2005 to 2018. And now I'm doing primarily private practice. And I've been interested in the board. I actually took my students here on a field trip. So I think it's a really important service that the board does. I am pleased to be part of it. Thank you.
Well, excellent. Thank you so much for joining us. Are there any board members that have any questions or comments for Dr. Catarina?
Just want to welcome Dr. Catarina. Thank you. Great to have a school psych on board. We haven't had one for a while. So
thank you.
All right. The board does have board surveys. We do encourage everyone in attendance today to provide feedback by completing the board assessment form. Please contact staff for the link to the new online survey and they will be able to get that over to you. See, I also want to recognize all of the board members for all of their hard work. I think this meeting and I would say most of the 2020 meetings thus far have involved hours of work and a lot of preparation for each meeting. I know some of the meetings have exceeded thousands of papers and documents to review. And so we greatly appreciate the time and the effort that has been set forth by the current board and continues to be set forth as we try to navigate 2020 and all of the excitement that has come from this year. I also want to acknowledge the efforts of board staff because with all of the virtual meetings and just the heftiness of the content of these meetings, I know board staff have been working very hard. I have received late night emails, I'm sure many of you guys have as well, that indicates that they are working closer around the clock to make sure that everything is running as smooth as possible for us. So we greatly appreciate board staff. And then we greatly appreciate our attorney, Gene Galvin, who has also been right there by their side, making sure that everything is running as smooth as possible. So without you guys, we wouldn't be able to do this, and we greatly appreciate all of your hard work. We'll now move to agenda item 4, the call to the public. Those wishing to address the board do not need to request permission in advance. However, the board may limit those persons speaking during this time to a reasonable number on any public comment matter. In addition, each person wishing to address the board will be given 3 minutes to do so. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.02H, The board can only take action on matters listed on the agenda. Ms. Poe, please let us know if you know of anybody that is looking to speak today, or if we can unmute telephone lines, see if anybody would like to speak. If so, please state your name and we will call on any participants. Hearing none, we will move on to agenda item 5, council updates. Ms. Galvin, do you have any updates for the board?
I do not have any update. The two matters that you had pending various levels of appeal have been adjudicated both in your favor, so I have nothing else to report.
Excellent. Thank you. We appreciate that. Agenda item number 6 is the consent agenda. For the record, are there any recusals from any items on the consent agenda? I will note that I have one, and that's going to be item D6 for behavior analyst applicant Nicole Dioper. A board member may request to remove an item from the consent agenda for independent discussion and action. Are there any requests to remove an agenda item? Do we have a motion to approve the items on the consent agenda?
So moved.
Seconded.
Excellent. We have a motion by Dr. Bohansky and a second by Dr. Meyer. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed, nay? Hearing none. Ms. Galvin, did you want us to give a moment for people to unmute and redo that vote? I think I only heard two, but I, again, can't see everybody.
That was my thinking.
Okay. Yep.
We need to hear everyone's audible vote one way or the other, please.
Excellent. Then we will go back to all in favor. Please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Much better. Thank you. any opposed, nay? Hearing none, the motion carries. All right. Moving along here. We do have a timed item, but we have a little bit of time before we get started there.
Madam Chair, I believe we can quickly get through agenda item number 11 for Dr. Wagner.
Excellent. Let me apologize. I still don't have a computer up, so I'm working a little bit old school at the moment. All right, agenda item number 11, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding a signed consent agreement for surrender of license for Dr. Rochelle Barry Wagner, CID in case number 2909. Ms. Michelson, can you please provide the board an overview?
Yes, Madam Chair. This matter initially came before the board at a special meeting in October of 2019. At that time, the board had summarily suspended Dr. Wagner's license and moved the matter to a formal hearing before the Office of Administrative Hearings. Subsequent to this meeting in December of 2019, Dr. Wagner entered into an interim consent agreement and order for voluntary suspension of license with the board in lieu of proceeding to a formal hearing. That order specified that Dr. Wagner would complete a fitness for duty evaluation with a board-approved provider. On June 5th of this year, the board reviewed the results of that evaluation at its public meeting. The evaluation indicated that Dr. Wagner was not fit to practice psychology and that further testing was recommended. During that meeting, I did inform the members that I had received an email from Dr. Wagner earlier that morning indicating that she no longer wished to practice psychology and would like to retire. It was noted that since Dr. Wagner had a pending complaint, she could not automatically retire her license as she had suggested in that email. After deliberation, the board moved to issue an interim order for Dr. Wagner to complete the additional testing, and if not completed within that time frame, the matter would automatically proceed to a formal hearing before OWA for revocation. In addition to issuing this interim order, the board did direct staff to work with Dr. Wagner to negotiate a possible consent agreement for the surrender of her license based on her indication that she does not intend to practice psychology at any point in the future. On June 29th, the executed interim order for the additional testing was sent to Dr. Wagner, along with a proposed consent agreement for the voluntary surrender for license for review and consideration. On July 10th, the board office did receive Dr. Wagner's signed consent agreement for the voluntary surrender of license, which is before the board for approval today. And if that is accepted by the board, the consent agreement will serve as a final disposition for this matter. I do not believe that Dr. Wagner is present today, but in recent correspondence, she did thank the board and staff for their time in this matter. That concludes my summary, but please let me know if there are any questions.
Excellent. Thank you, Ms. Michelson. Does anybody have any questions?
I'd like to go ahead and make a motion to approve the motion to accept her surrender of license.
Second.
Excellent. We have a motion by Dr. Malott and a second by Dr. Bohansky. Is there any further discussion?
We will need a roll call. We will need a roll call.
Perfect. Ms. Poe, I believe, are you able to do a roll call for us?
Actually, Madam Chair, I'll be covering Ms. Poe's duties today, so I can execute the roll call. Ms. Shree? Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Dr. Bohansky?
Yes.
Dr. Catarino?
Yes.
Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Mr. Diner? Dr. Gill?
Yes.
Ms. LaBoy?
Yes.
Thank you. And Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
You have 8 votes in the affirmative.
Could you repeat Mr. Diner's vote? I heard some.
Mr. Diner won't join the meeting until approximately 10. Oh. He's recorded as absent.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. The motion does carry. We still have a couple of minutes. Ms. Pacman,
I could do my item.
Okay.
So I'd like to go ahead and just review briefly number 18, Dr. Dwani Bukhari.
And I need to recuse myself from this.
Yes. Dr. Kotari is applying, has actually been reviewed by the board before. She is requesting approval to sit for the ECCC. She graduated from the clinical psych program at ASU, has completed a pre-doctoral internship. She needs to retake the ECCC, which is why the request is coming back before the board for her approval. And I don't see any problems with the application. So I'd like to make a motion to approve her application to sit for the ECCC.
Second.
Excellent. We have a motion by Dr. Malott and a second by Dr. Bohansky. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed, nay?
And then one recusal.
Oh, and one recusal. So we have one recusal and the motion does carry.
Thank you.
All right. We have one more minute. Ms. Pacanon, do you think you can do agenda item 12?
That might take a little longer. Maybe Dr. Meyer can do one.
The time is now 8:45, so we can certainly start on that timed item.
Perfect. That sounds great. Thank you. All right, we will now move to agenda item number 7, discussion, consideration, and possible action relating to the initial review of complaint number 2047 and the results of the evaluation completed by Austin McCall, PsyD, in accordance with her May 8, 2020 consent agreement and order for complaint number 2047. The board may vote to go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38-431-03A2 to review confidential records, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is confidential by state or federal law, and or ARS 38-431-03A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. The time is now 8:46 a.m., and we are moving to agenda item 7. Dr. Meyer, you are the lead on this complaint. Please keep in mind for all participants that we are just using, there is no complainant, so we don't have that. But if there is anything that is confidential, that we will need to go into executive session. So Dr. Meyer, can you please provide us a brief summary of the complaint 2047 for the board?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On February 19th, 2019, Dr. McCall was issued a temporary psychology license, and her license was approved for independent licensure on 10/23/19. During that on that application, she did indicate a past history of some criminal charges, but her license was approved at the December 12th, 2019 meeting. 4 months later, on April 22nd, 2020, board staff received an email from the Arizona Psychological Association indicating a concern was submitted to them about Dr. McCall's safety with her child and practicing as a licensed psychologist. Information was forwarded that indicated Dr. McCall was a complaint was opened. Dr. McCall was contacted and agreed to take a
Hi, I'm counsel for Dr. McCall, Tammy Tabeo. I'm representing her. Sorry to interrupt you, Dr. Meyer. I would assume most of that information that you are reading is marked confidential on the report. So I would like to move to go into executive session.
Ms. Galvin, I believe that the summary at this point has just been from the initial complaint, which is public record. Can you please provide us some guidance before Dr. Meyer continues?
The initial complaint, that is a confidential record. Dr. Meyer was providing just a summary of that matter. Because it involves potential healthcare information, I think that if Dr. Meyer would like to finish his summary explaining the procedural nature of the matter and steps that have been taken till this point, we could do that. And then if there's further discussion, we can go into executive session.
Thank you. So Dr. Meyer, please, if you could refrain from speaking to anything specific that may be in the evaluation or details of any health records, and just bring us up to date on where we are procedurally, we would appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. So Dr. McCall agreed to signed a consent agreement to have an evaluation done to determine her fitness to continue practicing psychology. That result was, or that evaluation was submitted to the board on June 22nd, 2020 for us to review. Currently, Dr. Paul's license is suspended until we determine next steps. So not sure what other detail I should provide at this point.
Dr. Meyer, I think that is good. And I think that I'm going to go ahead and make a motion that we go into executive session. We're going to go into executive session for the purpose of reviewing confidential medical records. Board staff, you have been provided two executive session numbers. The number that we're going to use is going to be the secondary number, not the regular call-in number.
And I can just email that number to the members right now.
Perfect. And then that way, Dr. McCall and Dr. McCall's attorney can join as well. All right. So that is a motion. Do we have a second?
Dr. Davis-Wilson, I would ask that the motion include not only a review of confidential records, but obtaining legal advice if necessary.
Perfect. Then I amend my motion to include the ability for the board staff to obtain legal advice as necessary. And then we would do that using a separate executive session line. And we can talk about that when, if necessary, when that time comes.
Can I get a resend to my Gmail from staff? I didn't receive an executive session.
Nor did I.
I just sent it 1 minute ago, so please try refreshing your email.
All right, we have a motion. We do need a second.
Second.
And all in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Excellent. Any opposed? Nay. Hearing none, please be sure to turn off your cameras and call into the, at this time, we're going to do the secondary line. That's been the number that has been provided to Dr. McCall and her legal representation.
Dr. Bohansky, I resent it to you individually.
Yes.
10 is out to 19. Do we have everybody?
I do have an update, Madam Chair. Ms. LeBoyd had to leave the meeting due to an emergency, but Mr. Guinard did join. Let me confirm that he is here or in the process of entering the meeting.
Good morning. I'm here. This is Guinard.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Diner.
All right. The time is now 10:20. We are going to proceed with agenda item number 7. Before we move to deliberations, I would like to ask if Ms. Thibodeau or Ms. Dr. McCall have any additional comments for the board. Hearing none. We are now going to move into discussion and deliberation. Oh, yes, Ms. Thibodeau. I apologize.
Dr. Wilson, right? Davis Wilson?
Yeah.
So I apologize. I was trying to get my computer on unmuted.
No worries.
I wanted to just make one last comment, was that Dr. McCall has complied with every request from the board and is timely filed and given everything she's needed to the board on time, has not asked for any delays. So I just wanted to also let you know that for consideration.
Excellent. Thank you. I appreciate that. So the board will now begin discussion and deliberation of this matter. Dr. Meyer, would you like to begin the discussion or make a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think that there are ongoing signs of concern. I think that Dr. McCall has made a lot of progress, but I do have ongoing concerns about her perception of the lack of impact of these problems that are on professional practice. I think that ongoing supervision needs to be in place, as well as ongoing treatment. And then I have concerns about her moving into a private practice where there's no support or ongoing supervision or consultation. Other comments, or should I make a motion?
Dr. Myers, if you know, Dr. McCall, I'm wondering if we could add the possibility of maybe a practice monitor or something, if she does want to go back to, as well as, of course, testing, you know, and we get periodic, you know, random testing. So I mean, I'm wondering if you can consider that.
Right. So if Ms. Galvin, do we need a new consent agreement, or we're asking to modify the existing one? What's the motion that we would be making?
It depends on the action you want to take. If you want to keep the suspension in place, then we would modify this interim order. If you want to lift the suspension and impose certain conditions, and some that I'm hearing are supervision or practice monitor with random drug screens, continued therapy, then we would enter into a new consent agreement with a period of probation that would include these terms.
Okay. So I guess I'm undecided on whether we continue with a suspension or not. I do have some concerns, but I don't know that that we would want to continue that. That's the question I have for other board members, is ongoing suspension or move back to just the monitoring and ongoing treatment requirements.
So, Dr. Meyer, if we could turn it to other board members for discussion. It sounds like we're not quite ready for a motion, which is okay. Dr. Bohansky.
Let me get unmuted here. A couple of comments as we're in a discussion period. I think the earliest phases of recovery are the most difficult and challenging for any individual. I don't care if you're a psychologist or a lifelong substance user. As such, anything we do, I would want to be in the guise of supporting Dr. McCall's recovery, because I think people in the early stages need as much support as they can get from as many corners as they can get. I'm not convinced that anybody in the short period of time from April to August completes their recovery. I think it's a little bit longer process. If she's choosing an abstinence route and a 12-step program, and she's up to step 3, I am pleased with that and wish that she would continue that phase. So my initial thing is to block or cancel her suspension and consent agreement and look at crafting something new that continues testing, that continues a probationary period. And I don't want to see that as a punishment to her, but I want to see that as a support to her efforts at recovery, and that there should be continued monitoring of her practice. The second piece of that that's of concern to me is therapy, whether or not we might want to limit that practice to assessment or forensic work, as I think the constructs of relational therapy bring up many of her issues that might continue to be too traumatic or sensitive for her management independently at this time. So I might want to see her practice limited to the forensic arena or perhaps the assessment arena.
Are there additional comments from board members?
And just for the members' reference, the evaluators' recommendations are on page 501. I know Dr. Bohansky recommended some of them, so those specific recommendations might be helpful for the members to take a look at when making a determination.
Okay.
Title I, correct? All right, and I would echo Dr. Bohansky in that I think that there's ways that we can do this and an approach that's supportive to Dr. McCall's recovery and still allows for us to have things in place that can protect the public, which is our ultimate duty. having said that, and in referencing the recommendations that have been set forth by the evaluator, is anybody comfortable with making a motion? And Ms. Galvin, I'm not sure if we need to make a single motion that would involve a decision on the current consent agenda and then enter a new motion for the new consent agenda if that's the direction it goes, or if we can lump all of that into one. Maybe that'll help provide some guidance on crafting the language.
It may be best to first consider a motion on whether to lift the suspension. And then we can have a motion presumably for probation and then what terms each member would like to have included.
I'd move that we lift the suspension.
Seconded.
We have a motion by Dr. Bohansky, seconded by Dr. Meyer. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 And did I hear everyone?
Aye.
Aye.
And Mr. Dinar, are you participating or are you recusing? I'm not sure.
I'm recusing because I wasn't part of the first part of the meeting.
Okay. Thank you for that. Otherwise, I believe there are no objections or opposition to that motion, so it would carry. So the suspension is lifted, and now the board needs to decide what they are going to do to ensure that Dr. McCall is safe to practice and that the public is protected. How are they going to ensure that?
So I make a motion that we accept the recommendations from Dr. Volson of a probationary period of 5 years and the stipulations of weekly individual therapy, monthly visits with an addiction psychiatrist, random drug screens, ongoing peer support, and I would add a practice monitor, and that we would reevaluate after 6 months. I think, what are the standard practice monitor time periods, 2 hours per month? Is that what we normally start with? Can anyone help me with that?
Typically, it's 2 hours every 2 weeks.
Okay. So, practice monitor 2 hours every 2 weeks and reevaluate after 6 months.
What about scope of practice?
Thank you. With a restriction of scope of practice to exclude therapy for the first 6 months.
Exclude.
I thought part of the monitor was so that she could continue, but anyway.
Well, there was the discussion to continue with evaluations, which is what she's primarily been doing.
Yeah, and my recommendation for the practice monitor is based more on because of the extended scope of practice. So,
we would discuss in 6 months, though. Maybe that could be added later. Expand the practice scope later, after 6 months, perhaps.
So,
So we do have a current motion, and I don't know, Ms. Gavin, were you able to catch all the stipulations in that motion?
I have. I'm not real clear. We're calling for a practice monitor that she would meet with for 2 hours every 2 weeks for a period of at least 6 months, and then her scope of practice would be restricted in that she can't provide, Dr. Bryhamson used a term like relational therapy. Is that correct?
Psychotherapy.
Okay. And then there was some concern from Dr. Malott whether the practice monitor is consistent if she's not practicing psychotherapy.
Yeah, so that's kind of part of my concern. I mean, I was thinking if it was expanded. I mean, maybe we would.
I agree with Dr. Malott. I think if the scope of practice is limited, we don't need a practice monitor until we resume the full scope of practice. So I would withdraw that with the idea that consider adding a practice monitor when we go to a full scope of practice.
Looking at Dr. Gill's comment, though, where even the evaluation can trigger things, I thought that was a good point. That's why I thought the practice monitor could begin even at the start.
Yeah, I am concerned about any practice without a practice monitor at this point, because there are concerns about status and recovery and impact on any kind of professional work. So I would prefer a practice monitor and then not restrict scope of practice so that we have that ongoing support from the very beginning.
I would want to restrict practice and have a practice monitor.
Any board members with additional feedback to that? Because it looks like...
I'm supportive of what Dr. Myers said, you know, providing the practice monitor without the restrictions.
Yeah, I see issues with trying to restrict the scope of practice, because the skills, the impact are going to, could affect her in any service that she's providing. So, I guess my motion is to not restrict scope of practice and include a practice monitor from the very beginning.
I would second your motion.
Okay. So, Ms. Galvin, does that clarify for you what direction they wanted to go with the practice monitor for?
Yes. May I reiterate the motion to be sure that I have it?
Yes, please.
So this would be a consent agreement. The probation period would be for 5 years. It would include monitoring that involves weekly urine random urine drug screens, and these recommendations are taken from Dr. Wolfson's report. The peer support meetings as required, monthly meetings with a psychiatrist specializing in addictionology. She would have a practice monitor that she would be required to meet at least 2 hours every 2 weeks. Her practice is not restricted, and she will be subject to a reevaluation by an addictionologist in 12 months. And in 6 months, all of this can be re-evaluated before the board.
In terms of the drug screens, the recommendation was twice a month, random.
Believe Dr. Meyer had asked for, I believe she's getting weekly drug screens.
Weekly individual therapy, random. I'm just repeating the recommendation.
Yeah, the recommendation from the evaluation was drug random screens twice a month. And okay. I'm fine with following those recommendations.
And may I ask Dr. McCall, who is she currently, is she still with Rising Phoenix doing these random dog screens, and how long will she continue to be monitored by them?
As long as is necessary. Yes, they do my drug screens, and I still go to therapy with them and have no end date in sight.
Okay, so we can, if that pleases the board, we can order her to continue this monitoring through Rising Phoenix.
And that would be reevaluated in 6 months?
Yes.
I would also like to emphasize that the practice monitor have a specialty in substance abuse.
And in Dr. Volsan's recommendation, she did also mention weekly 12-step meetings. So I'm not sure if that's something the board wanted to consider also.
I believe it was embedded in Dr. Meyer's motion to accept those recommendations from Dr. Volsan. Is that correct?
Yes, the peer support weekly, at least weekly meetings.
Okay.
All right, Ms. Kevin, are you clear on...
I am clear. I'm wondering if, because the suspension has already been lifted, if she doesn't enter into this consent agreement, do you want to have a backup plan that is part of that? If maybe Tammy wants to chime in with Dr. Hall, if she doesn't sign this, do we start proceedings for a summary suspension?
Yes, that's fine. You can put in language for that.
Do you anticipate there's going to be objection to the consent agreement?
I don't anticipate. I would like to ask about the 5 years. I know Dr. Volsan was 12 to 24 months. So I was hoping, but then again, if we can reevaluate and let's say in 2 years and everything seems okay, or I'm not sure, then if... At that point, if the practice monitoring and probation can be lifted, and then she would have a, then you'd reevaluate obviously, and then see if she can have a full license. Is that what I understand? Also,
we could put a clause in there that says after 24 months she could seek lifting of the term of probation.
Yeah, I just need one of some relief valves, you know, just in case, and that would be the only thing, but we can negotiate. We did this before, some language. Does that make sense?
Okay. And even at the 6 months, we can, that is our typical, we reevaluate the terms and, you know.
Oh. All right, I just wanted to make sure we have some relief valves. And then I'm not expecting, you know, it can be, takes a while, and then, and eventually if she has the full license, if maybe she wants to move out of state again, you know, leave with her son or move closer to her family, which is on the East Coast. So, but then she would have to stay here until her...
She would have a full license under this consent agreement. And we would be interested in reevaluating it at 6 months. That's fairly standard.
Sure. We just want some relief valves, and that's fine. I don't anticipate any other objections. So.
Okay. All right, so is everyone clear on the motion? Otherwise, I can repeat it. Dr. Meyer made the motion. Dr. Malott seconded the motion. I will need a roll call.
All right, Ms. Pacanon, if you could please do a roll call.
Certainly, Madam Chair. Ms. Shreve, absent. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Dr. Bohansky?
Yes.
Dr. Catarino?
Yes.
Dr. Baby?
Yes.
Mr. Dinar, recused.
Recused.
Thank you. Dr. Gill?
Yes.
Ms. LaBoy, absent. And Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
And I guess we'll have one final request of the attorney until we get this consent agreement written and finalized. Will your client agree to submit to the board staff the results of her testing that occurs every 2 weeks?
Yes. Oh, yes. I think that you've gotten tests through June. But, yeah, no problem. That won't be a problem.
And the provider can send them directly to me, Tammy.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right, it is now 10:43 a.m., and we'll go ahead and move to agenda item number 8, which also involves Dr. McCall. The discussion, consideration, and possible action related to the initial review of complaint number 2049. Dr. Meyer, will you please provide the board a brief summary? Please also keep in mind that if it is involving medical records specific to Dr. McCall, that we will need to go into executive session.
Thank you. So complaint number 2049, Dr. McCall's ex-partner alleged that Dr. McCall obtained prescriptions from a nurse practitioner, and those prescriptions were under the ex-partner's name and used his insurance coverage. The ex-partner alleged that he never saw the nurse practitioner. Records from the nurse practitioner do show documentation that she provided treatment to the ex-partner. And that concludes my summary.
Thank you. We do have Dr. McCall here with legal representation. Would either one of you like to make a comment?
Can you hear me? This is Tammy.
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. I was interrupted by something. Our comment is I feel that the claims in complaint 2049 are unsubstantiated, and I'm not sure what other questions the board may have, which we can do in executive session, but they were done in retaliation, at least my point of view, with Dr. McCall. So, and that's the most I would say at this point.
Thank you, Ms. Thibodeau. Does board staff have any questions? Oh, I'm sorry, board members.
I don't have any questions, and didn't see any legitimate concerns in this complaint.
I just have one question for Dr. McCall before we move forward, and I'm going to try to phrase this in a way that is safe in open meeting. But the allegation involved potentially having access to actual medication that's prescribed to the ex-partner. Do you currently, I know partners stay together, they, you know, have sleepovers, they maybe live together. Do you currently have access to those prescription bottles at this time?
Absolutely not.
Thank you. That is the only question that I had. Any other board members have any additional questions? Hearing none, thank you, Dr. McCall, Ms. Thibodeau. We will go ahead and move into discussion and deliberation. Dr. Myers, you have started us off a little bit on discussion, but if you have anything else to add or would like to make a motion, that would be a good time.
Yes. As I said, I don't see any issues here that warrant further investigation, and I would make a motion that we dismiss this complaint.
I second.
Excellent. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Is Mr. Dinar still recused from this one, or is...
There's no need for him to be that I'm aware of unless he chooses to recuse.
Okay.
He's here for the discussion of the peers.
Right, and since this is a new matter and a separate agenda item, anything that happened under agenda item number 7 wouldn't picture into my evaluation.
Perfect. Yeah, I just wasn't sure if I heard you. So, but thank you. I appreciate that. So anybody in favor, nay, or anybody not in favor, indicate so by saying nay. Hearing none, the motion carries. Ms. Thibodeau and Dr. McCall, thank you very much for being here today. We appreciate your guys' time, and we appreciate you being here.
Thank you. We appreciate your time.
Can I interject with just an update for the board members and the public relative to our technology issues? Yes, Ms. Bachmann, please do so. Unforeseen events, Krishna Poe had created this meeting as the meeting host and established myself as the co-host. And in the process, I thought we would not have any control issues with this meeting, but it turns out that Zoom requires the host key for this meeting, which only Krishna has, and she's on vacation. So we are working on a number of strategies to try to remedy this situation. We're trying to get in touch with her. I'm waiting for a support agent to help us out. As the owner of the account, I would like to think that they can transfer host privileges to me. But in the meantime, what the system is going to do is they're going to eject us from this meeting every 40 minutes. I actually see a counter right now. When there's 10 minutes left of that 40-minute period, I am alerted and I see the countdown. So fortunately, we can rejoin this meeting time after time. It's going to be an inconvenience, of course, to the board and to the public, until we get a better solution in place. But that is what we are dealing with from a technology perspective right now.
Ms. Peckerman, one probably a strange and bizarre question, and if it's not a possibility, that's okay as well. When that pops up the notice for you, it also gives you the option to enroll your account as a premium member for the $10. Is that something that the board staff can, or the board can kind of direct the board staff to do? I mean, it's $10, but it might ease a little bit of the off and on.
Yeah, I'm seeing that pop up, and I'm trying to activate the, accept.
Heidi, you're not.
I'll be vigilant to support because I think I will mute Jennifer Michelson while I hopefully get some help.
Heidi, since you're the owner of the account, Heidi, couldn't you just start a new meeting and invite everybody?
I believe in doing so, we would potentially violate open meeting because open meeting access information, and so the public wouldn't be properly noticed.
I see.
Yeah.
No, I think it's probably fine and probably a good reminder. I don't know, Heidi, if you want to kind of give us the 2-minute mark or 5-minute mark, and that'll probably be a good reminder for me to make sure that we take some comfort breaks, because otherwise I'll just keep working through the day anyway. So on that note, is there anybody that needs a comfort break? Are we good moving forward with the next agenda item?
Did you see it says Heidi is now the host?
Right.
Did you get that pop-up?
It still only shows you have 6 minutes, so I don't know if the members want to take that comfort break and then rejoin. This really would be up to the members if they want to.
I think the challenge will come because of the meeting was created by another host.
Yes, there's 6.5 minutes.
Well, 6 minutes, I would just move that we go ahead and everybody sign up and sign back on.
Maybe we can do one quick item.
Dr. Meyer, if you can orient, I think some of the applications are quick, and you've got 2, 19, and 20. Are there, can you do one of those?
Yes. I can do number 19.
Excellent.
Discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding application for licensure by waiver from Dr. Jerry Gentry.
Dr. Meyer, I'm so sorry. Jerry ran off to a group she had to run, so can she just be notified real quick?
Yes, this is going to be very quick, and
I don't think we have questions, do we, Doctor?
I don't think there are any questions. Okay, so her application was reviewed July 9th. We requested additional information because the application said that she did not have 2 hours of supervision per week for her internship. However, she produced her supervision and practice logs that were signed by her supervisor, and her supervisor noted that she made a mistake by checking the box that there were not 2 hours of supervision per week. And her supervisor, Dr. Leal, did provide a new verification form. So everything looked consistent with the additional information, and there were no other issues of concern. So I would move that we accept her licensure, her application for licensure by waiver.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Well, thank you. Any opposed? Nay? Hearing none, the motion carries. And with that, we'll go ahead and take a 5-minute comfort break. That will allow for us to rejoin the link again. So if everybody could join on.
About 5 11. Minutes,
it's at 10:59, 11 o'clock at the latest.
11 a.m. Perfect.
Yep. Thank you. We can begin. We do have a timed item that we will go back to. So the time is now 11:03 a.m. and we are going to move to agenda item number 9, discussion, consideration, and possible action related to initial case reviews. I want to remind board members that the purpose of the initial review is for the board to determine whether there are or there may be violation of rule or statute. The board is not conducting an informal interview for this case today. The board may vote to go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38431-03A2 to review confidential records and or ARS 38431-03A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. Individuals who wish to speak must complete a request to speak form and provide it to the staff board member. I believe that we have present for today one complaint, 2042, and that's going to be with Dr. Denbauer and his legal counsel, Mr. Hunter. Both are present today. Dr. Gill, you are the lead board member for this agenda item. Will you please provide the board a factual overview of the case?
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. First, with background information, the complainant is LB. This is an initial interview. LB was a former patient employee of Dr. Denbauer. On August 17th of 2017, Dr. Denbauer performed a neuropsychological evaluation of LB at Smart Brain Aging. LB then participated in Dr. Denbauer's Smart Brain Aging program until April of 2018. She was treated by Dr. Denbauer and received treatment from other staff members. LB is a Medicare patient. LB, shortly following treatment in May of 2018, was hired by Dr. Denbauer as a customer advocate on a part-time basis. 8 months later, she was laid off. From May of 2019 to 6th of 2019, LB worked as a social media rep for Dr. Denbauer, working for only 1 month as pre-planned. LB, following work with Dr. Denbauer, lodged a complaint alleging ethical issues regarding the treatment she received, her employment with Dr. Denbauer's Smart Brain Aging, and the subsequent contact. LB's complaint is identified as follows. Following a neuropsychological evaluation in 2017, August, Dr. Denbauer began as LB's treating psychologist. Dr. Denbauer was aware of LB's multiple psychiatric hospitalizations, her past trauma, and her limited faith in the mental health system. Dr. Denbauer diagnosed LB with a particular disorder that references developmental issues, disorder that is no longer found in the DSM-5. LB doubts that the diagnosis is valid. LB is subject to a prior neuropsychological evaluation in April of 2017 with the Dr. Rosenbaum, a neuropsychologist. LB has a history of being violently assaulted with depression and self-harming kinds of behaviors and with brain trauma. She has a history of self-destructive behaviors and has a history of 25.
We may have to be careful about how much information we disclose. Thank you.
Okay. She has a history of multiple psychiatric hospitalizations. LB alleges that Dr. Dunbar used her to boost credibility of his failed online brain health program. Dr. Dunbar met with LB's parents, recommended LB start communicating with her parents and to follow a, quote, healthy path. LB accused Dr. Dunbar of mental and emotional abuse repeatedly. She claimed that Dr. Dunbar in December of 2017 evoked or facilitated a psychotic break in his office. Dr. Dunbar allegedly used LB's vulnerability to encourage LB to seek legal counsel against her family, mainly her parents and her aunt, for, quote, false financial holdings. Dr. Dunbar allegedly called LB's attorney and told him that he looked forward to working with him in the future. On May of 2018, LB was hired as reported. She observed unethical behavior in the office, too afraid to say anything. Dr. Dunbar said to LB, quote, our paths would cross again. Dr. Dunbar advised LB to consult an attorney, told the company's emails were hacked, her HIPAA rights were violated. LB, as a result, was upset and unsettled. In February of 2020, Dr. Dunbar brought LB's artwork, which was previously in Dr. Dunbar's office when he was with Smart Brain Aging, to her current workplace, exchanged text messages, visit involved a long, tight hug that LB found uncomfortable. Dr. Dunbar suggested lunch sometime and said, quote, I like your hair, unquote. Later, LB told by former coworkers the company wasn't subject to a fraudulent takeover. LB panicked, told her current boss, no more contact with Dr. Dunbar. She felt fearful and was sleeping poorly. These events led to a hospitalization in late February, early March. She lost her job as a result. And LB was further concerned and upset that Dr. Dunbar, in her view, quote, destroyed my family, unquote. Dr. Dunbar and LB had Facebook contact. At one point, LB claimed that Dr. Dunbar called her beautiful on Facebook. She eventually blocked him from her Facebook page. LB reported Dr. Dunbar's avowals accused him of including the information on a second party in one of her evaluations. LB's psychiatrist reported to her that Dr. Dunbar was subject to other complaints. LB medical records in 2018, sessions were not documented. And LB felt manipulated because she felt pressured to place positive reviews online regarding LB's or Dr. Dunbar's work. Dr. Dunbar reassured LB, you have no psychotic disorder. LB did undergo withdrawal from one medication and seizure activity from another medication and was very ill at the end of 2017, early 2018. LB requested records in a text message to Dr. Dunbar, March the 15th, 2020, but never received any records. Additional records by LB. There's a psych eval that was conducted May the 14th, 2020. And she presented with a number of symptoms, including concerns.
We want to avoid discussing the evaluation, please.
Okay. Now, the board staff records, Smart Brain Aging, treatment and employment records were received with respect to LB. Smart Brain Aging reported, quote, Dr. Denbar would not write notes for individual sessions with any patient, unquote. He was allegedly, Dr. Denbar allegedly was waiving copays for LB. There were a number of non-collectible payments as reported April of 2018. The licensee response, Dr. Denbar denied access to LB's clinical record and said clinical file electronically transmitted would be a HIPAA violation to open. The board requested in March of 2020 that Dr. Denbar submit records by April of 2020. That deadline was extended to May the 25th and then to June the 1st. Dr. Denbar reported on June the 2nd, quote, I lack access to information. On June the 11th of 2020, Dr. Denbar received LB's records. Deadline for a response was 6/29/20. LB, following therapy and employment with Dr. Denbar's company, at the time praised Dr. Denbar's integrity. The last contact between them was amicable and friendly. LB's complaint, according to Dr. Denbar, is a result of Dr. Franco, an individual with Smart Brain Aging that Dr. Denbar is having legal dispute with, his Dr. Franco's attempt to divide LB and Dr. Denbar, given their legal battle. That concludes this report regarding this 2442 report.
Thank you, Dr. Gill. And I do believe that we have LB, if you would like to make a statement, unmute, and it's only referred to LB. And anybody else by initials? Would you like to the board?
Yes, you were cutting out a little bit, but I think I got the gist of everything you said. You just want me to refer to myself with initials. What was the other?
And any discussion of any diagnoses or evaluations that are specific to your medical record, that is also confidential, so you do not need to disclose the details of that. The board has that information in front of them.
Sure. Okay, thank you. This is a quote. It's, courage is the most important of all the virtues, because without courage, you can't practice any other virtue consistently, end quote. And that's by Maya Angelou. Good morning. I appreciate each of you being here today and allowing me to make a brief statement. I would like to think I am courageous for being here and speaking up. My name is LB. I was a victim of John Denbar. He was repeatedly deliberate with intentional disregard for me while I was in his care. He continuously manipulated me, lied to me, and took advantage of me. As a licensed neuropsychologist, John Denbar crossed multiple boundaries and was inappropriate with me on numerous occasions. I won't forget what he did to me. It's not my decision what happens to John Denbar as a licensee for his violations. I put my trust in you as qualified and experienced board members to do that. I am moving forward with my life, though. That is a gift I will give to myself, a virtue that comes with my acts of courage. Thank you again for listening to me. I'm here to answer any questions you may have for me at this time.
Thank you, LB. Board members, is there any questions for LB?
This is Dr. Gill. LB, I asked you this question during our last meeting, but I wondered if you were able to determine when your Facebook page included Dr. Denbar, when it first began that you became Facebook friends?
Yes, Dr. Gill, I don't know how to go back. We're not friends. He's blocked, so there aren't any dates to go back to. I can tell you definitively we were definitely already Facebook friends when I began employment with the company. So as the most recent would be May of 2018 that we became friends. I'm not sure how much before that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any additional questions for LB? Hearing none, thank you, LB. We're going to go ahead and introduce Dr. Denbauer and his attorney, Jeffrey Hunter. They are participating with us today. Dr. Denbauer, would you like to make a statement?
I'll defer to Mr. Hunter if that's okay first, and then I'd like to make a statement after. Would that be okay?
Excellent. Yes. Mr. Hunter, for the record, can you introduce yourself prior to making your statement?
Good morning. My name is Jeff Hunter, counsel for Dr. Denbauer. Thank you for giving me the time to make this statement. There's a lot here, so bear with me, so this might be a little bit more than just a couple minutes. First and foremost, I think it'd be in the best interest of the board to continue this hearing. The reason being is related to the chart that the board has produced to us. As it is clear, I think of no dispute, at the time that the records were requested, Dr. Denbauer had no access to LB's records. The board investigative file was produced, and there are irregularities in the records that were produced. First and foremost, there's two packet of records that were produced by presumably Dr. Franco, one of his employees. I think it was one of his employees now. If you look at the billing statement that was produced, the billing statement reflects that the first therapy session, September 13, 2017, the first record for psychotherapy produced was December 6, 2017. There is no record produced prior to that. There's no document produced prior to that. Second, there's two sets of records that were produced. There is one set of notes that were progress notes that were produced, and at the bottom you can see they have page numbers 1 through 38. Those notes start on December 6, 2017, with the last note of March 19, 2018. They do not include the note from March 5, 2018. There's another set of records produced by Dr. Franco, which reflect page numbers starting 1 through 58. The only documents produced are numbers 20 through 45. That packet begins with the first note of January 15, 2018, and ends on March 19, 2018. When you look at the notes that were actually produced, what they reflect is they're all up here that come from EMR. They will reflect the note type, which is SOAP note. They reflect seen by. Many of these notes reflect seen by Dr. Denbauer. There's interestingly no documentation for all of Dr. Denbauer's notes. They will also have under chief complaint appointment time with arrival time. It is apparent that whoever at Dr. Franco's office was charged with accumulating these documents has not produced all the documents. You don't have to doubt me. You just go to the documents that have page numbers 20 through 45, which are notes, and you can clearly see at the bottom, it will say 20 of 58, 26 of 58, 27 of 58. By my count, there's approximately at least 12 documents that should have been produced that have not been produced. So the record that's produced is suspect in this case, and I think the board should continue this hearing until a complete and total record can be obtained. It's clear, and it cannot be controverted, that there is something amiss. One set, pages 1 through 38. The other set says pages 1 through 58, and not all 1 through 58 were produced. going on to the other issues that had been raised. There were some indicators concerning...
Mr. Hunter, if I may, this is Jean Galvin. You seem to have made a verbal motion that this be continued until the documents are received. It is your position that the board does not have in its possession all of the records. And Ms. Michelson may want to explain to the board, but a subpoena was issued to the organization. And before we move on to other points you want to make, I think we need to deal with your request to continue the matter. Ms. Michelson, do you want to explain the subpoena?
Yes, Ms. Galvin, thank you. I did send a subpoena for LB's complete clinical record from the agency previously, and they did send the information to me electronically. When this matter was reviewed at the CSC meeting, Mr. Hunter did raise this point. After that meeting, I did ask him to provide a list of the specific documents that he indicated were missing. Despite my request, he did not provide that. However, I still followed up with the agency myself to determine if they sent the entire record, specifically the progress notes. On August 3rd, the representative did indicate that they sent everything that was in their possession, and I did upload this email and a supplemental on the portal. So at this point, the agency represents that they have sent everything to the board.
So I don't know how the board members feel. If you want to proceed, Ms. Michelson has indicated she's issued the subpoena. They said they've complied. They provided everything that they have in their possession. So does the board want to proceed and can hear this matter, or do you want to continue granting Mr. Hunter's request and see if there are some more documents out there that Ms. Michelson can try to obtain?
Do board members have any discussion? Dr. Bryansky.
I don't like making judgments without having all the facts on me. If there's some evidence via page numbering that there have been pages withheld in some fashion, I'd like to request by page number the specific ones that are not in our possession. There's a serious question that the doctor has not provided adequate documentation, or that documentation in some way suggests less than adequate treatment. I understand we sent a subpoena and they've said they've got everything or sent everything, but if within what they have sent us, we can identify missing pages, as Mr. Hunter has suggested, then I think it behooves us to make an attempt to gain those missing records.
Ms. Michelson did request Mr. Hunter to assist her in itemizing the documents she believed were missing. There was no response to that request. So perhaps if Mr. Hunter is willing to assist Ms. Michelson in informing her of what documents may be missing, that would be helpful.
I will do that today. I can itemize cross-referencing with the billing statement as exactly documents that have not been produced that should exist. EMR systems function as such. If there is an appointment made, there's an automatic document created. If LB showed up for the appointment, she would be logged in by the staff, and there will be a document. There's also page irregularities that suggest there's other pages. So I know the entire file wasn't produced. It's clear it wasn't. There's no debate.
Hi, I'm Emily, and I produced all the records. Am I allowed to speak up regarding this matter?
Not at this time.
Could I ask a question for Mr. Hunter?
Yes, Dr. Millett.
My question, you said something about pages 1 through 58 and that there were missing pages. Could you tell me, because I have all 1 through 58.
I do not. So right here on these?
Yeah, that bottom, I have every single one. I went through the whole 1 through 58. Right?
I do not have 1 through 58. I spent 6 hours going through all 500 and some odd pages yesterday, going through these and looking and putting these documents in date order. On the ones through 58, they're not even producing date order. I had to go back and put them in date order.
I'm assuming with the board members that we have all page numbers.
I do not.
Dr. Davis Wilson, would it be helpful to hear from, I believe her name was Emily, I'm sorry, I didn't catch her last name, who responded to the subpoena to see if the board members have questions of her about what was included or?
Yes, and I do apologize to Emily. I just wanted the other conversation to end first, but I would be happy to involve Emily as she is the individual that supplied the records. Emily, I also did not catch your last name, but now that they have concluded their side of that conversation, if you would like to unmute yourself and introduce yourself for the record, first and last name, and provide us some information on the documentation that was received or was sent into the board.
Hi, yeah, my name is Emily Fager. I do work for Giacchino Franco, and I have been working for Smart Brain Aging since he bought the company on July 3rd. I can answer any questions you have, but I have produced every record I have, all the billing, all almost nearly over 200 emails with LB and John Denbor. If you look at certain records, I know one of the big questions was if John wrote notes regarding any time he saw the patient. There's a file labeled LB Records. It's 38 pages. If you look in there, what his attorney was saying is true about the records. When you're on the calendar, it'll show your appointment time, and then it'll show the time you arrive, such as if you go to page 3 of the document, she was seen by one of our therapists. And under chief complaint, you'll see appointment time, 10 a.m., arrival time, 12:38 p.m. If you scroll through these documents, you will see, let me get to a page. Okay, page number, hold on, sorry, scrolling. There are notes in here. Okay, page 9. This was a soap note for an appointment with John Denbor. Says seen by John Denbor. Arrival time 2:30. Appointment time 2:30. Arrival time 2:14. There is no note written here. I cannot produce a note that I physically do not have that was not completed. We have records from a previous practice fusion account they have. They had records being stored on a Google Drive that were written in Word documents. And then I have any medical record that was produced during our time. Laura Blumberg was not seen at our office, so therefore there are no recent notes. But all the notes that I have, all the evaluations I have, everything was produced into a Dropbox that I sent Jennifer Michelson the link because the file was too large. She approved this method. So everything I have has been sent. I have no problem if somebody wants to come here and investigate and see every single record we have, but I cannot produce something that was not created by Mr. Denbor.
Thank you, Emily. At this time, I'm going to ask board staff has any questions specific to Emily or questions for Emily?
No, thank you.
All right. Does any board members have any questions?
This is Dr. Meyer.
Yes, Dr. Meyer.
Ms. Michelson, can you confirm that we have two sets of records or two documents for this, and as Dr. Malott said, I don't see any gaps in those numbers. Can you confirm that those two documents were sent to Mr. Hunter?
Yes, they were. He was sent the original investigative file, which is 661 pages, as well as the supplemental, which is 40 pages. And that supplemental is from Ms. Fajir, who's been talking on the phone, indicating that they had sent the entire records, and she actually resent the SOAP notes again in that email. So he was sent those items 2 weeks ago.
Thank you. I don't see any reason that we can't continue on this.
Is that a motion to deny his request for continuance?
I would make a motion to deny the continuance.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. And then board member Susuk, just an initial review. If the board has the option to dismiss, if the board moves it forward for the next stage, Ms. Michelson can work with Mr. Hunter to be sure that any pages he alleges he's missing, Ms. Michelson will be happy to resend them. Excellent. Thank you. Mr. Hunter, would you like to continue with your opening statements?
Sure.
Excuse me. While Mr. Hunter is preparing, we have about 6 minutes left on the duration of this current meeting. So I think everyone knows the drill. Come back into the meeting after you've been ejected. Thank you.
Thank you. There's the issue that has been raised concerning the neuropsychological testing, and if I get too specific, someone please tell me, because some of this mandates specificity. As Dr. Gill stated in the initial neuropsychological testing by Dr. Venmoor, he made a statement that LB that there were, and I'm going to quote, indicators indicative of a certain syndrome. That's specifically what the neuropsych says. It says indicators indicative of. A neuropsych report was produced by Dr. Hickson that is dated May 14, 2010, in paragraph 3 of said report. Starting the third line, he states, most recent list of formal diagnoses reviewed by this examiner is a May 3, 2018 entry. That data is important because by stipulation, I think everybody understands that LB was not treating with Dr. Denbor in May of 2018. And one of the diagnoses is, can I say the diagnoses or not?
No, thank you.
Okay. Well, essentially, what is being complained about was diagnosed and put in Dr. Hickson's report, and it was diagnosed and by a different individual than Dr. Denbor. So there is a collateral evidence from at least another provider that is indication of that spectrum was present related to LB. There is the issue of the psychotic break issue, which the allegation is Dr. Denbor created the psychotic break. I point the board to the plethora of text messages that were produced in this, wherein LB specifically texts to Dr. Denbor that, quote, I'm having a psychotic break. I can't fight it anymore. I know there is heaven and hell. It goes on. And then subsequent that she would be going to a facility for in-hospital hospitalization. The records from that hospital do not reference anywhere in any page Dr. Denbor, or that any of her conditions were caused or contributed by Dr. Denbor anywhere in that particular record, including but not limited to the discharge summary. There is a plethora of allegations in this matter regarding what I will put under the auspices of stalking, I think the word has been used, or grooming. When one reviews the plethora of text messages, other than what I see as a time period in which there was some back and forth concerning employment, those text messages, the ones produced, are almost all initiated by LB, not initiated by Dr. Denbor. If you read every single page, the responses to those text messages are professional in nature, and they are supportive in nature. In reference to the stalking issue, the only documentation provided is related to text messages and is all surrounding returning some artwork. It is a exchange of text messages between two people that are appropriate. It was an offer to return artwork. There's also a request for artwork to be returned. LB suggested they meet for coffee. The doctor couldn't, said he would drop them off anywhere she wished. She provided him an address. He dropped them off at the address. She initiated the hug, not Dr. Denbor. And now, 2 years later, she suggests that the hug was somehow inappropriate.
Mr. Hunter, I'm going to go ahead and stop you right there because we are going to get cut off. But then as soon as we get cut off, come back in, and then I'll turn it back over if you have any additional comments to make.
Okay. This is Dr. Denbor. I would like 5 minutes to speak to my attorney prior to resuming.
Okay. Then what we'll do is when this call ends, then we will all log back in. No later than 11:45. So a short comfort break for everybody that gives you time to speak to your attorney, and everybody will resume at 11:45.
Thank you.
2020 through March 3. Upon admission, the initial records from the hospital do not reflect anything within those records of a complaint regarding Dr. Denbor whatsoever. After multiple days in the facility, approximately a couple days or so later, LB references, quote unquote, stalking. She also references, some issues concerning family. She also references significantly that, quite frankly, the reason she was admitted was, quote, due to repressed memories that were resurfacing and could not control them, in close quote. And then the doctor writes in regards to PTSD and lack of sleep throughout.
Mr. Hunter, if you could refrain from referring to the record and reading from the record, those are confidential health records. Thank you.
Those records, along with a plethora of documents provided by LB, which are written by LB, reflect that she had significant issues with her parents and her sister, inclusive of emotional, physical, sexual abuse, as well as what I would summarize as financial exploitation at all times. These were in her own handwriting. And they start early on in the treatment process. I also note that there were no apparent subsequent records produced that would reflect any injury, damage, or any type of follow-up treatment related to anything concerning Dr. Denbor whatsoever. There's also a text message from LB that is in the material she submitted. The date is a little bit difficult, but I believe it's on or about October 15, I believe the year is, appears to be 2019. In her writing, she writes, I'm doing really well, thanks. I owe so much of it to you. Thank you. You believed in me. I know great things are going to happen for you. In LB's own handwriting. There has been suggestions of a violation of the dual relationship ethical standard. Clear reading of 3.05 requires the doctor to be acting within his professional therapeutic capacity at the same time he's having a different relationship with the patient. That clearly did not occur even by LB's own admission. The therapy had ceased and had ended. Subsequent, she was offered employment, of which she stayed for quite a period of time. And then when some funding fell off, there were not sufficient funds to keep her on the payroll, and she was furloughed at that time. There was no dual relationship whatsoever. There's this reference to Facebook and Dr. Danboer writing the word beautiful. That's in there. But the response from LB was a big thank you and a comment to the effect of referring to Dr. Danboer as he, quote, rocks, close quote. There are suggestions in LB's last statement of boundary violations. There's no text message. There's no Facebook. There's nothing provided that reference boundary violations. There was therapeutic care and treatment provided. Subsequent, there was an employment relationship. And that's what is reflected in all of this material. You don't see any unprofessional conduct whatsoever by Dr. Denmore in his interactions with LB. Returning to the issue of the records briefly, I have to admit I find it somewhat unusual that essentially testimony by someone other than the complainant and the licensee was allowed without the opportunity for cross-examination or further inquiry on that. It is clear all the records have not been produced. I don't know the reason for that. I certainly understand someone may call in and say they believe they've done that. In fact, they believe they've done that doesn't mean, in fact, they have done that. And at the break, I went and looked, and I see that I do not have all 58 pages. I'm not casting aspersions on anyone. You know, things can happen, but we don't have those records. And I'll let Dr. Denbor make a statement if he wishes at this point. If there's anything I missed, we're certainly here to answer those questions. There's a lot of allegations here. So I'll turn it over to see if Dr. Denbor would like to make any statement. Otherwise, answer whatever questions that the board has.
Thank you, Mr. Hunter. I would like to just remind everyone that this is just an initial review, that we are not in any informal or formal hearing. And as such, with the board staff with the board members confirming that we do have the records right now, we're just looking at this as an initial review, and that if additional documentation and sorting those things out need to be done, we will make sure that that's done prior to the informal hearing. Dr. Denbauer, would you like to introduce yourself for the record and make a statement?
Yeah, hi, this is Dr. John Denbor. Thank you for your time. I also do not have complete records in multiple ways. One is I also have the page numbers missing from the records that I have received in reference to Mr. Hunter. In her testimony, Ms. Fager asserted that I did not write notes, psychotherapy notes, et cetera. I can confirm, and I've confirmed pervasively, that I did write those notes, that those notes were contained in the paper chart of the complainant, LB, and those charts were taken from me when Gio Franco, Emily Fager, et cetera,
unlawfully broke into my office and removed all the paper charts and took them to their own office. So if the board would like to see where those exact psychotherapy notes are, they are in the paper chart of LB that is contained at Smart Brain Aging's office.
Whole paper chart was scanned in and provided.
Miss Emily, I would ask you to refrain from speaking at this time.
You may continue.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I have asked Miss, just to be frank, I've asked Miss Galvin this, and she responded to me by email. But if Emily Fager has not just served in this capacity providing a simple statement to the board as to whether they provided or not, she made more statements than that today. And if people are extraneous people are allowed to speak before the board and to answer extemporaneously to questions when asked, that is not following the due process regulations for this board. And I would like to be given the opportunity, if that is to be allowed, to have other people speak in that fashion to my defense.
Members of the board, Dr. Denbor had emailed myself and Ms. Michelson and Ms. Pekkanen and copied his attorney and essentially objecting to Ms. Fager's information. I replied to Dr. Denbor that she was responding to inquiries raised by Dr. Denbor's attorney about the lack of documentation, inconsistent numbering, suggesting that documents were missing. Board staff and board members confirmed that their documents were numbered consecutively. Documents did not seem to be missing. Ms. Fager is not a fact witness. She was simply responding to inquiries about Smart Brain Aging production pursuant to the subpoena. This is an initial case review, and it is not the form in which the board hears from fact witnesses.
Well, if I may just say and put this on the record.
John, hold on.
I just want to put this on the record. To the extent that questions were asked of Ms. Fager, you necessarily made her a fact witness. If the board is going to rely on one iota of what she says, she's just being a fact witness.
And I'd like to add, I'm not an attorney, but Ms. Fager, I mean, I'd humbly request the board to consider reviewing what she said, because what she heard, I respect that Ms. Galvin is stating, and I heard it to be, that they asked the question of Ms. Fager. My concern is not the question, my concern is Ms. Fager's response. Ms. Fager's response was much more than simply responding whether all the records were there or not. She said two or three things that I believe to be false, and I believe that those falsehoods would bias the board's proceedings. Therefore, I would say that, you know, my concern is not necessarily asking the question. My concern is, again, the response, and I would kindly ask the board to review that response. To my recollection, there was a mention of the company being sold, which is untrue. There are many statements within that small statement that are factually incorrect that would result in a biased opinion, including the statement that I don't write progress notes, which is a major issue and in this case.
Dr. Denbor, I appreciate it. Does that conclude your statement?
It does not. I guess I'm making that point, and if I'd like to see what the essentially are we done with that issue, or is that issue to be addressed at this point?
I will defer to Ms. Galvin, but before I do, want to just speak to the question that was asked. The direction of the board is to review the answer that's provided to the inquiry that the board question was.
And at this time, the board has already motioned that before us today, we have enough records to move forward with an initial case review. Within that motion and that conversation, we did also note that it is very important that the documentation we have before us is the same documentation that both you, Dr. Denbar, and Mr. Hunter have before you, and that we will have board staff working with the both of you to clarify what information is missing and what information you guys feel would be pertinent to this. And so I do agree that at this time the board is aware that there is documentation concerns and that we have instructed board staff to work with both you and Mr. Hunter on resolving those. Ms. Galvin, do you have anything else to add?
I do not.
Dr. Davis-Wilson, can I just clarify my issue, and I appreciate you saying that. My issue is not with that issue. My issue is purely and only at this point with, I understand that those could be resolved, that external board members are being allowed, external members are being allowed to speak. That is my issue, and I just want to confirm that that we are moving on with that issue before I continue with my statement.
And I believe one of the second questions related to that, Ms. Galvin, you can assist as well, but there is a call to the public on the agenda at all times that if there is an individual that would like to make a statement or a statement regarding a specific agenda item, that they do have the opportunity to request to do so. So I do, I know you asked if that would be something that the board would listen to as far as you bringing forth individuals of your own. All of that can be done through the call to the public. Sometimes at the discretion of the chair and or the legal counsel, we do change the order in which we will hear a call to the public. But yes, you are able to do so. Ms. Galvin, do you have anything to add?
And as you stated, that would be through the call to the public. Witnesses are not heard from during the initial case review or the informal interviews or investigative interviews. If Dr. Denbar wants to proceed with his statement.
Okay, so my understanding is that at this point we're moving on from the issue that somebody was allowed to speak outside of the call to the public.
That's not a characterization, Dr. Denbar, and perhaps your attorney can explain it to you later. If you want to object or move straight to formal hearing, that's your right. That's where witnesses would be heard from. As I explained to you, Ms. Fager was not a fact witness. She explained the company's response to the subpoena when your attorney raised concerns over whether all the documents were presented.
I would just put on the record it was not a statement. There was a question and an answer with Ms. Fager.
Okay,
but
so there's a difference.
We understand, but we understand.
Sold in July or whether it was a hostile takeover. That's
but,
no.
But we understand the position of the board. So I believe we made our point. We think the question and answer to Ms. Fager was grossly improper.
Dr. Denbar,
we understand why we're here. So, John, why don't you move on to your next issues?
Got it. Okay. So, I had treated LB for a period of time. For a substantial period of time, as I mentioned to the board during our initial meeting regarding this case. It's very hard, I think, for therapists to have favorite clients, but she was undoubtedly one of my favorites. I had not just a good relationship with her, but a great relationship with her. She struggled quite a bit through her time as a client. You can see that in some of the records that were supplied. Emails that were sent to me during times that that she was having severe mental health difficulties, and I completely second her quote in regards to courage. LB is perhaps you have not obviously met her in person, but she is perhaps, as you get to know her, one of the most courageous individuals that that I have ever met personally or professionally. I've met her parents once. My impression is they're also very creative people. And as I said in my response to this complaint, I have nothing but very positive things to say about her. And she had nothing but very positive things to say about me until apparently this spring when I asked her to contact Gio Vancini's Franco's office for records that they had stolen from my office regarding LB's death. At that point, after I had dropped off her paintings, which she had done so wonderfully for our office, the next thing I had heard is receiving a board complaint in the mail, and obviously the board knows these accusations. I have stated, as Dr. Gill had said accurately, my belief that in just a really malicious and terrible, terrible action to falsely persuade a compromised individual maliciously go after somebody else. Dr. Franco and others have encouraged her to file a board complaint against me and have conspired to give her false information regarding my care and continue to do so. In general, I strongly believe in the care that I provided and feel very confident in my clinical abilities and my professional abilities in working with Laura or LB. I want to assert that how great a person she is and how much affinity I have for her, both at a personal and professional level. I'm happy to respond to the specific complaints. I do think there are significant factual inaccuracies that were stated by Ms. Fager as well as by LB, and including stalking or any sort of emotional connection that occurred. I'm happy to respond to those specifically. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Denbauer. Is there any questions from board members for Dr. Denbauer?
Since this is Dr. Gill, Dr. Denbauer, thank you for coming in today. I had a question, kind of a follow-up question from what came up in the screening committee regarding what tests you use and what criteria you use to determine the diagnosis that you provided on that 2017 neuropsychological evaluation. What test did you use?
Can I, I'd like to look at the evaluation.
Okay, well.
Would it be possible, could I kindly ask the board if they're gonna refer the specific page numbers to let my attorney and I know which page number you're referring to?
It starts on page 377, the 2017 okay. Eval.
Thank you.
And the specific diagnosis, although I will not mention it here, is on page 379 of your report.
Thank you.
Are you able to, do you have any, you don't have access to that?
No, I do, sir. I just, it's just pulling up right now.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
No problem. Ms. Michelson, I'm assuming that was you speaking. Again, I don't not see page numbers on my file.
Did you download the file or is it in your browser?
Not sure quite the difference. I downloaded it.
The page numbers are at the top.
Of the top, file. Right?
In the middle. It'll
or you can do Control F.
Oh, I see it. I see it. Thank you so much.
So 379 would be the specific diagnosis okay. that Dr. Gill was referencing.
Okay, I have 307 pages in my file.
Would you like me to do a share screen to show the about?
Whatever you feel would be helpful.
Well, is that allowed? Is that legally allowed? I don't know.
I would not advise that because I think the other people on the call could see that then.
That's correct. Okay. So I would not. That would
be okay. Thank you, though.
Could I continue with another question, or should I just wait for you to respond? I'm not sure where we are here.
Okay, let's see, Hunter, I'd recommend you just ask another question, and then I'll make sure they're writing to come back to it if you forget it.
Dr. Dunbar, do you think it was wise to put LB in a position where you were her treating psychologist up until for some months up until April of 2018, and then the next month hire her on a part-time basis. Do you think that was a wise move on your part?
I think that that's, I mean, I might respectfully state that's factually inaccurate.
Okay, could you state the accuracy of it then?
Yeah, I was not her treating psychologist up to April of 2018.
Okay. So when did her, were you ever her treating psychologist?
Yes, sir.
And when did that end? When did that treatment end?
Approximately December of 2018.
2018?
I'm sorry, you said 2018?
Well, that's what you said.
December, sir.
I was suggesting that, it was my impression that the therapy ended in April of 2018.
That is not accurate.
And so I'm asking, when did her your treatment with her terminate?
Approximately that November or December.
Of what year?
I think it was the previous, the 2017, the previous November or December.
Okay.
I would love to look at the records because I'm going off my memory. And I would prefer to have this accurate records to be able to make those statements.
Certainly. Okay. Well, maybe I'll ask it in this way. Given that you had previously treated LB maybe up until December of 2017, do you think it was wise for you to hire on a part-time basis in May of 2018, particularly given that she had some challenges? And a lengthy history of issues.
Yeah, I mean, I can emphatically state I would not call my decision. I think it would be giving me too much credit to say that it was a wise decision. But it turned out to be an amazing decision. LB was by far our best employee. She was marvelous. She did not work under me in any way. Let me rephrase that. She worked under our CTO, Sal Fogarty, and he supervised her on a daily basis. LB was, you can speak to him directly, but LB was excellent. She was as close to darn near perfect of an employee as you possibly could get. She called she called these older individuals and had these beautiful conversations with them. She related to them. These people would call and email me and just tell me what an amazing person they were speaking to. And we gave her raises on the basis of just she wasn't in a revenue generating position at all, but she really got at the ethos of what I wanted my company to be, which was a place that could be friendly and invoke nostalgia in older people. And she did that, and she did that without any training at all. I started the company as a memory to my grandmother, and she just followed that perfectly. So in short, everybody would rave about her, not just me, and I can't give myself credit for the decision, but she just needed no management. She did amazing. She did excellent up until the time that the company was fraudulently taken over.
Thank you. And when did you become a Facebook friend for LB?
I honestly don't know. I don't monitor my Facebook. I have one, but I don't.
So it was not during the time that you were the treating psychologist for her?
Dr. Gill, respectfully, if you're, I appreciate the seriousness of this discourse, and you might be asking me questions that I have to guess on, and just quite frankly, sir, I don't want to guess. So I don't believe it was, and I could, I'd be very happy to look at the research through Facebook when we became friends, but I don't accept friend requests. I just don't. I haven't really been on my Facebook for like 7 months, so I don't know.
I have one final question. Did you waive a Medicare copayment for LB?
I've waived zero copays in my professional lifetime.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Dunbar.
Thank you.
Dr. Gill, this is Jeff Hunter. I said I'd remind you, you had a question about the neuropsych exam. I don't know if you want to come back to that. I promise I'd remind you, so I'm doing it.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Is this the time to review this, Dr. Dunbar? Do you want to, just a simple question, what test might you have used to help you to render your diagnostic impression, and what criteria did you use?
I'm going to go off memory here, so I just want to assert this is a guess. I'm not looking at the report. But I typically do a clinical interview. I typically do a ADOS. I typically do a personality assessment, subtest from the WAIS-4, subtest from the WIMS-4, both obviously adult versions. Depending on the client's needs, I have a flexible battery, so I might do like if they have attention and concentration difficulties, which I remember LB having, I might do a TOBA. In LB's case, a lot of the assessment is really clinical interview and, just history, right? No offense to LB, but in speaking to her initially, you would not get the impression that she had a pervasive history of problems. And in speaking to her parents, they obviously revealed much more and greater depth of the sort of the complexity of the situation. So there was a collateral interview as well. So that's my recollection from memory, and I would appreciate the opportunity to look at the exact record.
Very well. Thank you very much.
I'd like to ask some questions. Is it appropriate now?
Yes, Dr. Federino.
Okay, so in looking at the ethics code of the APA, it does talk about multiple relationships as occurring at the same time, but there also is a question, a point where there's a promise of a future relationship with the client that they consider to be unethical. So even though you were not employed, she was not employed with you and receiving therapy or services, there was a future that you had with her, and since you hired her later. And that's in 3.05.
I'm sorry, which subsection, ma'am?
3.05.
Which subsection?
There is no, that is C, that's the third point of that 3.05.
Dr. Pedorino, may I ask a question?
Sure.
Are you, I'm sorry, I just can't tell by the tone of your voice. Are you asking if there was a promise of a future relationship, or are you
speaking? I'm just making that clear to you that even in the future, there could be questions about having, because the way your attorney stated it, he said at the same time, she was not employed with you while she was receiving services. And I'm just commenting on that. There was also, there's a question about future relationships.
Well, I'm sorry, if you're asking the question, I'm not sure if you are, but there was never any promise of any future relationship before we were there, any future professional relationship. I called LB about 4 months after, quite frankly, because she had done this really beautiful artwork in our office, and I was going to return some of it. And then she said, keep it. And I said, hey, we have, you know, we have this position open. Would you be interested? She came in. She interviewed well. And we had made it very clear at that point or that we were there was going to be no professional relationship between us from a therapeutic perspective. And then we commenced with the contracting of a professional position.
Okay, so that my next question is about neuropsychological evaluations. So typically, I thought that there usually is a, since you referred to the history, that her history was significant, and looking that over, that was a pretty short history. I wonder also, the question I have, though, is how soon after another evaluation has been done is it appropriate to give the exact same subtest in terms of looking at practice effects?
How would you like me to answer the second question first?
Second question, please.
Okay, thank you.
How soon is it the preferred typical wait time between in that evaluation, not in just checking for progress, or but in an initial evaluation? How soon should same subtest be administered?
I mean, I think it's a simple question and a complex answer.
I'm happy to
just, you know, feel free to stop me when you like. You know, I don't have the test manuals in front of me, so I guess in general I would say that retest validation on standard neuropsychological tests and standard intelligence tests is laid out in the psychometric characteristics of the manuals of those tests. So I'm happy to tell you what I know from memory in terms of test retests on the test that I use. Obviously, this differs, and you know, the Heaton manual states this, as well as the WACE and the WIMS manuals. It depends on diagnosis and the scope of the evaluation. But there are standards, and those standards are typically somewhere between 6 months and 12 months, depending on the subtest. So,
okay, you gave them 4 months later.
Yes, yeah, depending on the interest of LB was not from, her deficits were not from a neuropsychological nature. The deficits were from a psychological and psychiatric nature. So I'm giving her
the title of the report says neuropsychological report.
I understand that. It was a neuropsychological evaluation.
But so the standard of care you're saying is 6 months to a year to repeat the same test.
But no,
is that correct?